Welcome to Christchurch London, a community looking to make a difference in the heart of London. This is a message from one of our Sunday celebrations. Thanks for tuning in, and do check out our website at www.christchurchlondon.org.
Okay, afternoon all. This is week four of a series of five consecutive talks on the life of Jacob. And we're going to pick up in Genesis chapter 32. That's our text for tonight. Rather alarmingly, we have skipped Genesis chapter 30 and Genesis chapter 31. So my job is to fill you in on what happened. And if you're joining us for the first time tonight in this series, you're feeling a little bit confused, then let us recap the story so far. Genesis chapter 25, we meet two twin brothers. Esau is hairy. He hunts and kills wild animals. He likes wrestling naked by the fire. He gargles rat poison. He listens to thrash metal. He's got a Megadeth t-shirt on, and he hasn't washed since he was 10 years old. That's Esau. Esau's younger twin brother, Jacob, is, by contrast, a mummy's boy. Smooth-skinned, hangs around by the tents. Jacob listens to S Club 7 and Steps. Jacob's been to see Mariah Carey in concert twice. He drinks fruit tea. Incidentally, the main thing that I learned through preaching on Jacob here at the Christchurch last month is that there is an alarming number of men, or so-called men, who... No, this is important. We need to get this nailed down. I had some very concerning... Reese, you're with me. Because two of the elders, probably Dave agrees as well, we think this is an issue. Too much fruit tree drinking amongst the men. Need to toughen up a bit. I'm going to take London for Christ. We're not going to take London for Christ, Jeff Stamps, drinking fruit tea. I'll tell you that much. Anyway, I just feel I need to get that. I'm sorry if you're visiting, but you just need to sort these out. It's not heresy. Was that Elwin? Where are you? Right, on we go. You can picture Jacob in Genesis chapter 25. There he is. He's letting his lentil stew simmer on the stove as he settles down to watch Deal or No Deal on TV. Jacob's got a cup of chamomile tea in one hand and a limp digestive biscuit in the other. But Jacob is also a schemer. So when Esau, his furry, crazy brother, bursts in from the country, and he's starving hungry, and Esau shouts, "Hey, Jacob, give me some of your stew." And Jacob, the schemer, replies, first, sell me your birthright, he says. Esau says, "I'm so hungry, I'm going to die anyway. What good's birthright to me? You can have me birthright, now give me some stew." Because even though they grew up together, they have different regional accents. As I realized whilst preaching, okay. Jacob replies, "Swear to me first." In other words, make it official. So Esau sells his birthright to Jacob for a bowl of soup. Esau trades his birthright for soup. He trades the promises of God for lentils. Don't do that, by the way. If ever you're given a choice between Jesus and lentils, choose Jesus. Lentils are overrated. Along with chamomile tea. So Esau despised his birthright. That's Genesis chapter 25. Chapter 27. More Hebrew comedy with Isaac and his dysfunctional family. Isaac and Rebekah each have favorite sons. Isaac loves Esau, but Rebekah loves Jacob. In fact, Rebekah is so desperate for her favorite little Jacob wake-a-poos to get daddy's blessing, get the blessing of Isaac, that she decides to deceive her own husband. Meanwhile, Isaac has gone blind and he's about to die. So Isaac thinks, "Oh no, I'm getting really old and I'm going to die. I better give my official blessing to my oldest and favorite son, Esau." So he sends Esau out to hunt and kill some wild game for father and son to eat together, which is part of the official blessing ceremony. Rebekah, meanwhile, his wife thinks, "Oh, Jacob, this is your chance. Esau's gone off into the woods to hunt down dinner. While he's gone, here, Jacob, come over here. Come up over to the dressing up box. Jacob, you dress up as Esau, then nip into the tent, trick the old man into thinking you're Esau, deceive your dad, make sure he prays for you, and Bob's your uncle. Jacob, you'll have the blessing of God." That's the plan. So Rebekah tricks and deceives her husband. She dresses up smooth-skinned Jacob as a sort of hairy monster. Jacob the deceiver, of course, is more than willing to agree to this deceptive plan. So Jacob dresses up as Esau. And then Jacob, of course, walks in with the food. And Isaac says, "Grief alive, that was quick. How did you kill the wild game and cook it so quickly, my son? And Jacob, verse 20, says, the Lord your God gave me success. Yeah, right. So Jacob, having stolen the birthright with lentils, now steals the blessing by dressing up in a gorilla suit. Isaac, who's blind, lays hands on Jacob and pronounces the blessing. Jacob exits stage left. Seconds later, Esau enters stage right on his Harley Davidson with a massive deer on the back of his bike that he's just killed. But he's too late. Jacob's already stolen the blessing. Isaac's only got one blessing, so Esau cannot get the blessing even though he sought it with tears. Esau is furious with rage. You know, like on the beginning of The Incredible Hulk. Do you remember that bit? Strange metamorphosis occurred. So he gets really angry, and he begins to plot his revenge against Jacob. Esau vows to kill Jacob. Verse 41, great verse. I will kill my brother Jacob. It's a text that you probably don't have on your fridge. I will kill. I will kill my brother Jacob. Any Christian parent's going to be worried when that verse is like your kid's favorite memory verse. I will kill my brother Jacob. Esau storms off to his bedroom, really angry. He slams the door really hard. He turns up his Megadeth CD really loud. He gets out a photo of his brother Jacob, and he sticks the photo on his dartboard. And all Esau does all day is he lies on his bed and he just throws darts at the picture of his brother, thinking, one day, I'm going to kill my brother Jacob. So that's his plan. So he just waits for his opportunity. When mum, Rebecca, finds out what Esau's planning, she tells Jacob, verse 42, Jacob, your brother Esau is consoling himself with the thought of killing you. That's verse 42. In other words, every time Esau's feeling a bit low, a bit down the dumps, he cheers himself up by thinking, soon I'll kill my brother Jacob and then I'll feel so much better. Giving you a bit of an idea of his state of mind. Rebecca says to Jacob, now then, my son, do what I say. Flee at once to my brother Laban in Haran. Stay with him, verse 44. Yeah, good idea. Good idea, Rebecca. Well done. Send Jacob to Laban. Laban, who is the biggest control freak in the whole of the book of Genesis. Well done, Rebecca. You've deceived your husband. You've turned your eldest son Esau into a crazed would-be assassin. And now, to cap it all, you're sending Jacob to Laban. What a good call that was. Who's the Genesis equivalent of a New York mafia boss. So Jacob goes out of the frying pan and into the fire. Jacob gets up to leave for Paddan Aram and the nightmarish world of Laban. But on the way, God comes to comfort, reassure, and encourage Jacob in a dream. This is chapter 28. God appears and demonstrates his compassion and his mercy and his faithfulness to Jacob. God shows Jacob a stairway to heaven, which is amazing because so far in the story, Jacob has done nothing right. Jacob is a cowardly, godless schemer who's just out for himself. Jacob is a spineless, fruit tea drinking weakling who just does whatever his conniving mother tells him to do, as long as it's to his own advantage. Now, you might think that God would be well advised to bin Jacob and to choose somebody else to get his will done. But the reason why the story of Jacob is so encouraging to me is that God doesn't give up on Jacob. God isn't put off by Jacob's sin. Jacob can't shake off the blessing of God. He can't unchoose himself. And that is true of you. Yeah, Adrian, but here's the deal. I'm not actually living a holy life, you might say. You might say, I'm what you might call, Adrian, a worldly Christian. That's pretty much what Jacob looks like at this point in the story. Jacob looks very much like a worldly Christian, but Jacob is still chosen. God still loves him. And so I really want to encourage you with this story this afternoon. I remember many years ago, in fact, it was in 1990 when I was in my second year at university and I got my big break. I was trying to become a journalist. I got my big break, which was I managed to persuade a man called Alan Rusbridger, who was the features editor of the Guardian newspaper here in London, to take me on for the summer. And so as well as watching the World Cup, which is the last time England did anything at the World Cup, was 1990, I also worked at the Guardian. So each morning I would get a train in from Wimbledon, where I lived, to Farringdon. I had to get this early train, and I would go up to the top of the Guardian building, and I had a Bible and a copy of Derek Kidner's commentary on Genesis. And I would read this for about an hour upstairs in this sort of toilet block, and then I'd come down into the features desk, which is where Alan Rusbridger, who I was really quite scared of, was the editor. And I look back at those days, and I think, it was such an encouragement for me to see in the Bible someone like me, someone like Jacob, who keeps on with his willful, selfish way. He's got a call of God in his life, but he keeps trying to bring it about by his own little plans and schemes. And rather than God giving up on him, God perseveres with Jacob. God perseveres with us. He's going to persevere with you. No, we cannot we can't shake off this call of God on our lives. And the amazing thing about Jacob is that God chose Jacob even before Jacob was born. And the same is true of you. That's what Romans chapter 9 is all about. Ephesians chapter 1 says the same thing. No matter how godless and no matter how carnal Jacob is, God doesn't leave Jacob. Even when we are faithless, God remains faithful to us. And when Jacob's running for his life, running like a coward from Esau, Jacob lays down one night on this stone as a pillow in a place subsequently called Bethel, and the Lord gives Jacob the most amazing God encounter. Jacob sees a stairway to heaven. Jacob sees heaven linked to earth and the angels of God ascending and descending on the stairway. And Jacob sees that his life is linked to the activity of heaven. So is yours. Your life is linked. Even as you're there in the garden thinking, can I really make it in journalism? Your life's linked to the activity of heaven. God is with you like he was with Jacob. How can I be so sure? Because that's what the Bible says. Remember, all the promises that Abraham had, Jacob received. Jacob inherited them. Abraham, of course, was a mighty man of God who did mighty feats of faith. And Jacob did none of them. Jacob didn't have any mighty feats of faith that he could pay attention to or call to God's attention. Yet nevertheless, God says to Jacob, Jacob, I'm giving you the same promise that I gave Abraham. And that's what Romans chapter 4 is all about. That you here in the theater this afternoon, you have the same promises that Abraham had. By faith, you have inherited everything that God promised to Abraham. Hallelujah. Romans 4, Galatians chapter 3. God says, Jacob, I'm the Lord your God. All the peoples of the earth will be blessed through you, Jacob. Jacob, I am with you. I'll watch over you wherever you go. And Jacob, I will never leave you. The same promise that Jesus makes to you. Matthew chapter 28. Now, you'd think that Jacob would be transformed by this amazing stairway to heaven experience. But he's not. Even though he's got the call of God in his life and he knows it, even though he's a man of destiny, he still hasn't tackled his character flaws. Jacob at this stage of the story is like a Christian for whom Jesus is Savior, but not yet fully Lord of his life. Jacob's will has not yet been broken. Does that sound like you? His self-reliance has not yet been wrestled out of him. Jacob believes the promises of God on one level, but falls down when it comes to actually trusting God to deliver in daily life. Is that you? So even after seeing the stairway to heaven, Jacob is still scheming. So this time, here's what Jacob's latest trick is. He tries to get God to sign a contract. Jacob offers God a deal on Jacob's terms. This is verses 20 to 22. Jacob says, God, it's not actually a prayer. It's sort of like a business proposition. It's like a fax he's sending to God's office. God, here's my proposition. If you will do X and Y and Z for me, and if you'll give me food to eat and clothes to wear, and if you'll bring me safely back here to Bethel, then I, Jacob, hereby promise that I, Jacob, will tithe. Ta-da! As if God's going to say, oh, Jacob, that is so kind because I am a little bit short of cash. To think that you, Jacob, would offer me a deal. That's really very thoughtful, Jacob. You know, this is kind of the way Jacob's brain works. Chapter 29, Jacob arrives in Paddan Aram and falls in love with Laban's daughter, Rachel. So Jacob here disobeys the golden rule, don't fall in love with the daughter of a mafia mobster. That's something we should all bear in mind. Laban's whole philosophy is, Jacob, you mess with me, you mess with my family. You mess with my family, you mess with me. That's his whole approach. And Jacob, incidentally, is not big on courtship and romance. In chapter 29, he sees Rachel in the distance, and he thinks, oh, she's nice. And so without even speaking to her, he just goes over to her, he gives her a kiss, and then bursts into tears. That's in the Bible. Now, guys, don't try that in the stalls bar afterwards. You know, you see someone you like, you go over, you think this is in the Bible, you go over, you give her a kiss, then you burst into tears. You might say, well, nothing else is working. Look, listen, don't. Let's not get into it. Don't go there, okay? Girls like conversation. They like a you know, conversation. Girls like, make a note, girls like conversation. That's what you need to remember. Jacob says to Laban, I love Rachel, I want to marry Rachel. Laban says, okay, you want to marry my goyle? I haven't been practicing, honestly. You want to marry my goyle? You worked for me for 7 years, deal or no deal, Laban says. Jacob says it's a deal because he's in love with Rachel, the girl that he kissed when he first saw her. Hasn't even spoken to her yet, but he's in love. 7 years later, Jacob says to Laban, oh, 7 years has gone by. Time's up. Time for me to marry Rachel. Laban says, no problem. But then as Rachel and Jacob go into the bedroom for their wedding night, Laban, wouldn't you just know it, switches in Leah, Rachel's older sister. Don't you hate it when that happens? Laban says, psst, here, Rachel, don't go in the bedroom. Come over here. Now, Leah, you go over in the bedroom with Jacob. And remember what we said? Remember what we said? Don't turn on the light. So in she goes. Don't turn on the light. Now, Jacob, who, as we have already seen, is not strong on romance, gets into bed with the wrong sister and doesn't even notice. Which is just shocking manners, apart from anything else. That's very poor form. Jacob wakes up the following morning with his lovely new wife, Rachel, but, oh no! It's Leah, the older sister. He's married the wrong sister. And it's quite hard to feel sorry for Jacob because he's just getting a taste of his own medicine. So at this point in the game, the scores are Laban 1, Jacob 0. Jacob says to Laban, referee, that's not fair. You brought in Leah from an offside position, he says. Laban says, no, no, if you watch the TV replay, you'll see that Leah was not interfering with play when the bedroom door was opened. She only became active later on. But because the rules say that the oldest girl gets married first and then the younger, because I'm kind, Laban says, you can have Rachel next week, but you have to promise to work for me for another 7 years. So Jacob the deceiver has clearly now met his match. He got tricked on the old firstborn child thing. Just like he tricked his brother Esau. So what goes around comes around. Laban does a number on Jacob. Jacob's sin finds him out, and Jacob does marry Rachel, but he's now got to work another 7 years for Laban, making a running total of 14 years that so far he's had to work to get Rachel. So Jacob is now married to both sisters. I know that's bizarre. Let's not go there. But he doesn't love Leah. Nevertheless, Jacob has four children with Leah. Meanwhile, Rachel cannot get pregnant at all, chapter 30. So Rachel thinks, this is a disaster, Rachel thinks. I'm 4-0 down. My ugly sister's having all these kids with my husband. And that really makes me feel mad. So I know what I'll do, she thinks, Rachel thinks. Here's what I'll do. I'll get Jacob to sleep with my maidservant, Bilhah, and I'll try and pop out a few kids through Bilhah, and we see if we can't even up the scores on the doors that way. So Jacob sleeps with Bilhah. Bilhah has two boys, Dan and Naphtali, making the half-time score Leah 4, Rachel 2. Leah's basically had her four-son advantage pegged back by two sons. So Leah has a sort of half-time team talk with her maidservant, Zilpah, and says, Rachel's catching me up, Zilpah. She's using the old having kids through your maidservant routine. And Zilpah, you are my maidservant, so why don't you sleep with my husband Jacob and you see if you can't restore our advantage? Another good call. So Zilpah sleeps with Jacob. Zilpah has two sons, Gad and Asher, making it Leah 6, Rachel 2. And all through this whole dilemma, I mean, Jacob is like, yeah, okay, so who am I sleeping with tonight? Just point me towards the right tent. Bilhah, are you Tuesday? No, you're... Zilpah, are you... No, you're... What, so, it, I mean, he's not exactly God's man of holiness and power at this stage in the story. Now, there's some weird stuff that happens next with some mandrakes. We don't want to go there. And Leah then has two more sons and a daughter. And then finally, Rachel does give birth herself, and it's worth waiting for because she has Joseph, whoo, currently playing elsewhere on the West End. And so, Jacob's... At the Adelphi Theatre, I think. We have to edit that. I don't know if we're allowed to say that. Jacob's now got 11 sons. Jacob's now got 11 sons and one daughter through his two wives and two maidservants. Then Jacob says to Laban, please, please let me go. I've been working for you for years. Laban says, okay, but first let's do a business deal and decide who gets to keep all the animals. But Jacob, the deceiver, comes up with an extremely ingenious sort of trick, stroke, miracle, whatever that is, with the speckled or spotted sheep, which leaves Jacob literally cashing in on the blessing of God. And so Jacob becomes enormously, fabulously wealthy. Jacob becomes exceedingly prosperous with huge flocks, but Jacob's still a coward. So after 20 years working for Laban, chapter 31 now, Jacob just gathers up his wives, girlfriends, and cattle one night and runs away. But just before sneaking out, Rachel steals Laban's household gods. This is a sort of lucky charm. Rachel, Jacob's wife, steals Laban's god for good luck. So she's clearly not yet ready to be an alpha table leader. One of the ways you can disqualify yourself is stealing gods for good luck. Incidentally, if your god can be stolen, that is not very impressive. I mean, can you imagine? I mean, Laban's like, oh no, I've lost God. Where did I leave him? Darling, you know, where's God? So, you know, let me just word of advice. If you could lose your God down the back of the sofa, maybe you've taken the wrong option. You need to hit the internet, get a different God. The real God. So Jacob, as per usual, does his usual routine of running away from trouble. Laban chases after Jacob. Eventually, Laban catches up and says, Jacob, you deceived me. And Jacob's like, I deceived you. You've got to be kidding. All I wanted was Rachel, but you made me work 20 years. You changed my wages 10 times. You've ripped me off again and again. Laban says, okay. Just give me back my household gods. Jacob says, look, I don't have your household gods. I promise you, you can search everywhere and everyone. Now, unbeknownst to Jacob, Rachel has got the gods. In fact, Rachel is hiding the gods by sitting on the gods. Why is she sitting on the gods? Trust me, you don't want to know. If you really want to know, go home and read it for yourself, but I'm not preaching on it. Laban can't find the gods. Eventually, Laban says, okay, Jacob, I give up. The war is over. Let's make a truce. I'll go my way. You go your way. I will basically have a parting of the ways. So at the start of chapter 32, Jacob is finally free from the grip of Laban. Laban, the godfather, is finally gone. Jacob's loaded. He's got a huge family of his own, but he still doesn't really trust God. Now, the reason for that unfeasibly long introduction, before we come to our text in chapter 32, is that to understand and really appreciate what follows, you've got to see that Jacob is someone who, like many of us, has got a checkered past. Now, is that true of you? Jacob has made a series of mistakes. He is a believer, but he has not been living a godly lifestyle. He has been selfish and cowardly. Jacob's been messed up and messed with. And as we've seen, Jacob came from a less than perfect family. Now, maybe that's true of you. I remember two churches back, there was this one lady who always seemed to be continually defeated in her Christian life. And I just couldn't really work it out. She had a wonderful husband. She had a great job. She came from a very solid Christian family. But she was always downcast and disconsolate, and I just couldn't work out why. And then one day I found out why. She discovered that her parents had hoped for a boy. That's why they decided to have another child. But instead they got her. So the fact that she's now married, the fact that she's from a great Christian family, the fact that she has a great husband doesn't change that. Is that you? You know, Jacob wasn't much better off than that from his dysfunctional family. All through Jacob's life, imagine this, he knew that his father didn't love him. That must be tough, don't you think? Isaac did not show love to his son Jacob. And that caused, that simple withdrawal of love, caused cataclysmic devastation in Jacob's life. Maybe that is true of you. Maybe for you, growing up at home, as far as your relationship with your dad was concerned, was like standing under an emotional cold shower. Maybe you feel like you've been messed up before you even had a chance in life. Maybe your life has been a life of family conflict. Maybe you're in family conflict right now. Maybe you're here tonight with unresolved conflict with your mum, your dad, or like Jacob, with your brother, or with somebody else. You can deal with it tonight. I'm going to give many of you an invitation to respond at the end, to come and stand at the front, and I want to pray for you. The great news is that in the story of Jacob, like no other story in the entire Bible, we find out that God is sovereign and can and will overrule both the family chaos and the mistakes. And amazingly, God doesn't quit on Jacob. God sends angels to Jacob to give Jacob another reassuring God encounter. This is chapter 32 now. Jacob also went on his way with the angels of God. When the angels of God met him, when Jacob saw them, he said, "This is the camp of God." So he named that place Mahanaim. And then Jacob has to face his past. Remember Esau? Esau, the brother he deceived. Esau, who when we last heard from him was cheering himself up by the thinking, "Hey, life's not so bad. One day I'm going to kill my brother Jacob and that'll make me feel so much better." Esau, who's had 20 years to stew over the injustice that was done to him. Esau is coming to meet Jacob and it's payback time. And Jacob panics and he tries to placate Esau's fury. Jacob sent messengers ahead of him and to his brother Esau in the land of Seir, the country of Edom. He instructed them, "This is what you are to say to my master Esau. Your servant Jacob says, I have been staying with Laban and have remained there till now. I have cattle and donkeys and sheep and goats and men servants and maid servants. Now I am sending this message to my lord that I might find favor in your eyes." In other words, Esau, "I've got a lot of stuff. I mean, don't kill me because, my lord Esau, if you don't kill me, I'll give you lots of presents. In fact, I've got an entire Celine Dion CD collection. I will give you a new car. I will give you a year's subscription to my favorite Deceiver magazine. And I'll also give you a set of saucepans. Esau, I can offer you a deal." Now, actually, if Jacob had believed the promises of God, he wouldn't have had to bother with all this. He would have known that God would protect him from Esau. Jacob had a promise from God that he would be protected from all harm. But Jacob doesn't really trust God to deliver on the promises that he also knows God's made. Can you relate to this dichotomy? Jacob doesn't trust God to pull through in real everyday life. Is that true of you? When the messengers returned to Jacob, they said, "We went to your brother Esau, and now he is coming to meet you, and 400 men are with him." And now Jacob's like really scared. 400 men. What do they look like? What do these 400 men look like? Well, they were riding on motorbikes, riding in formation, and they had these really high handlebars, and they were listening to Slayer, Anthrax, and Napalm Death, and some of them were drinking blood, and they all had the words "Jacob must die" tattooed on their foreheads. Apart from that, they looked harmless. In great fear and distress, Jacob divided the people who were with him into two groups, and the flocks and herds and camels as well. He thought, if Esau comes and attacks one group, the group that is left may escape. So this is Jacob's latest self-preservation strategy. Split my family in two, and then maybe while Esau and his biker friends are killing one half of my family, I can escape with the other half of my family. Good call. He's basically terrified. Finds it hard to trust God when it comes to everyday life. And so now, when Jacob gets really scared, this is when finally Jacob prays. I mean, isn't that like us? When it's like really scary, oh no, this is going to be awful, that's when we pray so often. And this is actually when he does pray, it's worth waiting for because his prayer is really good. He says, "Oh God of my father Abraham, God of my father Isaac, oh Lord, who said to me, 'Go back to your country and your relatives and I will make you prosper,' I am unworthy of all the kindness and faithfulness you've shown your servant. I had only my staff when I crossed this Jordan, but now I've become two groups. Save me, I pray, from the hand of my brother Esau, for I am afraid that he will come and attack me and also the mothers with their children. But you have said, 'I will surely make you prosper and will make your descendants like the sand of the sea, which cannot be counted.'" This is the first clue in the whole story that we get that maybe some of all that God has done for Jacob has actually penetrated his brain when we actually hear him pray. Because when he's at rock bottom, he doesn't simply panic. He goes back to the word of God. He goes back to what God has actually said. Folks, this is the way to pray. When you're feeling, now he does express his feeling. He does say that he's afraid, doesn't he, in verse 11. But he holds on to what God has said. Now, here's what God has said. God has said, "Hey, your descendants, Jacob, will be so numerous, they'll be greater than the number of grains of sand at the bottom of the sea." And so he quotes the promise back. He said, look, you said my descendants will be too numerous to count, so please, God, honor your own promise and save me from the hand of my brother Esau. Now, of course, because he's Jacob, he can't entirely trust God, because Jacob can't, for some reason, trust God. So he spent the night there, and from what he had with him, he selected a gift for his brother Esau. 200 female goats. I love this. 200 female goats, 20 male goats, 200 ewes, 20 rams, 30 female camels with their young, 40 cows, and 10 bulls, and 20 female donkeys, and 10 male donkeys. So his strategy is basically, Esau, don't kill me because I'm really a nice guy, and to prove it, here's 200 video games, 20 Alpine stereos, 40 toasters, 10 laptops, and a signed photo of H from Steps. So I must be a good guy. He put them in the care of his servants, each herd by itself, and said to his servants, go ahead of me and keep some space between the herds. He instructed the one in the lead, when my brother Esau meets you and asks, to whom do you belong and where are you going and who owns all these animals in front of you? Then you are to say, they belong to your servant Jacob. They are a gift sent to my lord Esau, and he's coming behind us. He also instructed the second, the third, and all the others who followed the herds. You're to say the same thing to Esau when you meet him, and be sure to say, your servant Jacob is coming behind us. For he thought, I will pacify him with these gifts I'm sending on ahead. Later, when I see him, perhaps he'll receive me. So Jacob's gifts went on ahead of him, and he himself spent the night in the camp. And folks, that night in that camp was the most important night in Jacob's life. That night, God came down in person and wrestled Jacob in the dark. God decided to wrestle out of Jacob all the self-reliance, to get Jacob to a point where he totally surrendered his will to God. Now, you and I have to go through this process. We have to reach a point of complete brokenness before God. When we've died to our own ambition. And we think this is so important, this process, that we're going to spend a whole sermon on this incident next Sunday when Dave's going to speak to us wrapping up the series. But here's a lesson from Jacob's life. Submit to God now, because if you don't, in the end of the day, you'll have your self-reliance and your self-will wrestled out of you later, and it's going to hurt when it happens later. So if you want less pain, if you want to be happier earlier, I would encourage you, respond at the end of this message. Get before God. Lay your life down. Don't wait for God to come down and wrestle it out of you. Yield while you can. Trust God. Submit to God. Give up trusting in your own abilities. Because if you don't, God has so chosen you that he will not let your silent rebellion continue forever. He's already your Savior. And I'm asking many of you tonight to make him Lord of every single area of your life. You know what? When we totally submit to God, we find out a lot of the stuff we worry about in life, when push comes to shove, it never happens. Oh no, I'm going to fail my exams. Actually, you passed. Oh no, it never happened. It's all going to go wrong. Actually, it doesn't. So much of what we worry about in life never actually takes place. All of our worry, often we find it's unnecessary. That's exactly what happened. This is Jacob's biggest fear in his whole life. My brother Esau, who spent 20 years waiting for me, is going to kill me, but it doesn't happen. Jacob looked up and there was Esau, coming with his 400 men. He's still panicking at this stage, so he divides the children among Leah, Rachel, and the two maidservants. He put the maidservants and their children in front, Leah and her children next, Rachel and Joseph in the rear. He himself went on ahead and bowed down to the ground 7 times as he approached his brother. And Esau came over with a massive dagger and stabbed Jacob to death 20 times. No, that doesn't happen. Verse 4, Esau ran to meet Jacob and embraced him. He threw his arms around his neck and kissed him, and they wept. Then Esau looked up and saw the women and children. Who are these with you? He asked. Jacob answered, they are the children God has graciously given your servant. Then the maidservants and their children approached and they bowed down. Next, Leah and her children came and bowed down. Last of all came Joseph and Rachel, and they bowed down too. Esau asked, what do you mean by all these droves I met? To find favor in your eyes, my lord, he said. Esau said, "Well, I have plenty, my brother. Keep what you have for yourself." "No, please," said Jacob. "If I found favor with your eyes, accept this gift for me. For me to see your face is like seeing the face of God. Now you have received me favorably. Please accept this present that was brought to you. For God has been gracious to me, and I have all that I need." And because Jacob insisted, Esau accepted it. Then Esau said, "Let us be on our way. I'll accompany you." But Jacob said to him, "My Lord knows that the children are tender and that I must care for the ewes and cows that are nursing their young. If they're driven hard, Esau, just one day, all the animals will die. So let my Lord go on ahead of his servant while I'm moving along slowly at the pace of the droves before me and that of the children until I come to my Lord at Seir." Esau said, "Then let me have some of my men with you." "But why do that?" Jacob asked. "Just let me find favor in the eyes of my Lord." So that day Esau started on his way back to Seir. Jacob, however, went to Succoth, where he built a place for himself and made shelters for his livestock. And that's why it's called Succoth. After Jacob came from Paddan Aram, he arrived safely at the city of Shechem in Canaan and camped within sight of the city. For 100 pieces of silver, he bought from the sons of Hamor, the father of Shechem, the plot of ground where he pitched his tent. There he set up an altar and called it El Haloi Israel, which means the God of Israel is mighty. Wouldn't you just know it? It all ends happily in the end. That's true of many lives here. It'll end happily in the end. Esau, even though Esau is not a believer, he doesn't exact revenge. Maybe God changed Esau's heart. I don't know. All we know is that the terrible thing that you so dread happening actually doesn't happen at all. It's all okay in the end. What have we learned from this story? You may say, "Well, Adrian, my family situation has messed me up. I'm not sure I'll ever recover." You might say, "Adrian, if you knew how many mistakes I've made since becoming a believer, how can God use me now?" Or maybe you're saying, "I'm sure God will have to choose somebody else. I must be such a disappointment to him." Well, you know what? You're not. You're not a disappointment to God, because God knew all of what he was going to get with Jacob. You know Jacob's 12 sons? You know what became of them? They founded the 12 tribes of Israel. You know Laban's trick where he married off Leah to Jacob? What a huge disappointment that was to Jacob. He worked 7 years for Rachel, got Leah instead. Can you imagine working 7 years only to marry someone else? What came out of it? Well, Leah gave birth to 4 boys, and the fourth of her 4 boys was called Judah. And Judah became the ancestor of Jesus Christ. God used Leah, the ugly sister, to bring Jesus Christ into the world. And maybe tonight there is one person who needed to get on a train and come here to this theater to hear that God used Leah to bring Jesus to people. And that is priceless, and so are you. But Leah didn't know that at the time. How come my sister is so much prettier than I am? How come my younger sister's getting married before I am? How come my dad's a control freak? No answer. Why couldn't I have grown up in a different family? Ever wondered that? I mean, what is God doing in the crazy world of Laban? What's God doing in the sinful world of Laban? The answer is he's redeeming it. The answer is that he's building a new spiritual nation that will change the world forever. What's God doing in the world of Laban? He's building Israel. He's preparing a way whereby through Leah's 4th child, Jesus Christ can come into the world. And the King of Kings can enter world history and save billions of souls. That's what's happening in the nightmarish world of Laban. You may have been messed up by your family. You may have been messed with by your family. But don't you dare say that that's all there is to it. Because God hasn't finished with you yet. God didn't make no junk. And even if you have lived all your life with the knowledge that you were supposed to be a boy and you're a girl, or vice versa, even if your whole life you felt like you're standing on the emotional cold shower of a father that just doesn't express love to you, or he's not even there at all, the story of Jacob shows you tonight that God hasn't finished with you yet. You know what? If God can use Jacob, God can use every single person in this room. You might wonder, why spend 2/3 of the message on all the preamble just to show you what a mess this guy was, what a checkered spiritual past he was. He was, you know, he supposedly believed all this stuff, all these promises from God, but couldn't trust God in day-to-day life. You'd think God might give up on him and find someone else. No! God's chosen you. So don't you dare give up on him. Why don't you submit tonight? In chapter 33, God's only just started with Jacob. Jacob's best years are ahead of him, and so are yours. If only you will submit to him. Now, if you don't submit to him, you can carry on playing games. This was Jacob's tactic. Decades and decades of game-playing, scheming, trying to get God's will done a different way or a better way. Oh, thanks for your promise, God. I'll try and bring it about with one of my cunning schemes. No, doesn't work. But eventually, because he's so full of cunning schemes to try and get God's will done for God, God decides to cut out the middleman and come down in person. And he physically wrestles, we'll hear this next Sunday, he physically wrestles Jacob to the ground, and he will bring you down. God will pin you to the mat. Here's the rules of wrestling. This is how you win at wrestling. You need either two falls from your opponent or one submission. And if you submit, if you give up at that moment, the wrestling bout is over. You give up on your will, you're broken, you submit. What do you want to do? Two falls, it's going to be painful. Or get it over now. One submission. Make Jesus Christ Lord of every area of your life. You will never regret it. Don't be a Jacob going on for years. Submit now. You'll receive all the promises of God that you've already got over you. You'll start to see them played out. And in this city, we'll start to see this city change. Greater things are yet to come. Greater things are still to be done in this city through Christ Church London, through you. Oh no, there's this one spiritual girl. I'm sure God will use her. No. God will use you. Yeah, but if you knew my checkered spiritual past, you wouldn't be saying that. No. I do know. Because whatever it is, it can't be as bad as Jacob. And yet God used him. God doesn't have a plan B. You're his plan A. He loves you. He has a plan for your life. Submit to him tonight. Should we stand together? Maybe the band can come and join me. The choir will come and join me.
Thanks for listening to the Christchurch London podcast. Do check out our website at www.christchurchlondon.org or come along and visit us at the Piccadilly Theatre in London's West End.